Quick story that has absolutely nothing to do with the sermon today, but well, it kind of has to do with it. I was telling the CNC class, the 9 o'clock Sunday school class this morning, about an experience I had back in college where I used to jump in this river and we would get in at the top of this kind of waterfall section and just shoot down the rapids, just jumping in, no tubes or anything, because that'd be wimpy, and just so much fun. And then as I was sitting out here kind of thinking, I remembered this other thing that we used to do in college. I had a buddy who had a rope swing. Have I ever told my rope swing story? All right, good. He had this rope swing that it was amazing. It was this long, steep hill and an oak tree at the bottom of the hill right at the edge of the lake. Great big old tree. And somebody had climbed up in this tree and hung a rope way up there. We used to get in that on the rope. And if you walked way back up the hill, eventually, you know, the rope wasn't long enough, and so they built a platform about 20 feet at least from the edge of the water. And then on top of that platform, there were two 4x4s with a 2x4 going across the top. There was another 6 feet in the air. So if you stand on top of that, you're probably about 10 feet above the ground, and the water is about 20 feet down that way, and you hold on, and you still, you're backside is about this far above the ground as you're flying out, and you swing out, and then you drop, and it's like a 3 or 4 second free fall down to the lake. So cool. So one day, I went to my buddy's house, and he had invited the entire freshman class at our campus church that we went to out to his lake house, and we're doing this, and there's these freshman girls, and I was a senior, and they had this rope swing club. You had to do an original trick to get in the rope swing club. And Joel, my buddy, he called me an honorary member because I had done lots of cool tricks, but nothing original. So I'm just bound and determined. I'm going to do a double back flip with a half twist and a can opener. And I could do the one flip, but I'm going to do two. I'm going to do it. And so, especially since all these girls are here, so I go to swing, and I'm way up on the top one because you need a lot of height to turn that far. And I go, and I, right at the peak of the rope swinging, I throw myself backwards, and I just froze in midair, and from 20 feet above the water, I fell straight down, and just pow, and I only sank about 6 inches below the water. My body stopped the fall, and from 6 inches under, I could hear everybody laughing, and I just wanted to stay there. So, that was an original trick, actually. Yeah. All right, so I need some coffee. So the story that we read, the woman at the well story, this is one you probably heard a lot, and we've talked about it, actually, back in the fall. But one of the things I want to draw attention to this week is how this story, actually, there's a lot of parallels between what was happening in Jesus' day and what's going on in our own context. And so I want to point out a few of those. In Jesus' day, Samaria, which is where this happened, it's a little region right there in Israel. It's kind of between Jerusalem in the south and Galilee in the north, where Jesus grew up. Samaria, it's kind of like Indiana, we'll say that. thank you. No offense to anybody from Indiana. If you're from Illinois, Indiana, never mind. But the Jews, as it says in the story, they didn't mix with people from Samaria. People in Israel had a real low opinion of people from Samaria. Especially the religious leaders. If you were from Samaria, you had some questionable religious practices. They were looked down upon. And so the people of Israel, they had this driving desire to be pure. To be pure. And so they knew that there were all these outside influences that were dangerous. There were all these things out there, these other religions, these other ways of thinking. There were people like these Samaritans out there who could taint us, who could make us threaten our purity. And so what they did is they created this bubble. The best way they could stay pure is just to stay inside their bubble and not have any contact, to the point where they didn't even talk to them. So what had developed by Jesus' day was this culture of separation. There's this sense that the religious people basically said, we've got God. We're going to worship God here. If you want some of that, you got to come to us. We're not coming to you. We've got God. God gave us this synagogue for us. We're here. You guys are out there. Please stay there. And that's the basic framework that Jesus' own disciples grew up in. So when they go with Jesus to Samaria, they're not the ones that are talking to the people that aren't like them. Some of us are reading this book that kind of talks about this story, and the author says the disciples probably, it says they walked into town to get food for lunch. So they're walking into town. The lady's walking out of town. They probably pass on the way. But you know what? The disciples didn't even talk to her. At least there's no indication of it. Because when they get back, they're pretty surprised that Jesus is talking to her. So the disciples who are on this this cross-cultural mission experience walk right past without even talking to the locals. Now, this may be hard to believe, hard to hear, but if we're honest, in a lot of ways, that describes the church today. We've developed this culture of separation where we think that church is something that's here for us. When we join a church, we look for a church that's going to meet our needs and our desires. We've made church into a bubble where you go to get away from the people that are not like you. We've got God. If you want him, anybody out there, if you want him, he's in here. You got to come to us. He lives here. Now, we live in a community that's full of Samaritans, but we don't bother engaging the locals. So Jesus he's demonstrating to his disciples and to us that it's time for us to get outside of our nice little religious bubble. Because we're not going to fulfill our mission in here. We're not going to fulfill our mission as long as we're focused on ourselves. We're not here for ourselves. We're here for those who are out there. This is a great example of Jesus living out his very own command to go and make disciples. He says that at the end of Matthew, his last words before he leaves, go and make disciples. I've talked about, if I were to translate that, another way you could say it is this, as you're going out there, it kind of assumes we're going. That's actually what the word go, it should be, as you are going, make disciples of all kinds of people who are not like you. The word for all nations is ethnos, something like that. And it means other people, people who are not like you. Here's Jesus doing that. Now, in Jesus' day, after they had been for literally hundreds of years, after those Samaritans had been scorned by the people of Israel, they were not about to come to the Jews to find God. They found God on their own in other places. You know what? Book after book, study after study, shows that people who are not a part of the church today, they are increasingly spiritual. They're searching for things that are sacred. They're looking for meaning. They're incredibly involved in activism and volunteering because they want to be part of something that matters. They're really quite open to God. They don't question whether there is a God. And you know what? They don't even question if they're separated from God. They're just not very impressed with the church because they know how the church sees them, the people who are not a part of the club. So they're, frankly, just not going to come to us to find God, just like the Samaritans did. They're finding their own ways to connect with God. So this story is a great illustration for us. It reminds us of something just essentially critical. We as a church will discover and we will live in our purpose when our focus is on those out there. Jesus took the time to talk to, get to know, to honestly engage this woman from another culture. To borrow a phrase from Young Life, Jesus earned the right to be heard. He takes her seriously. He treats her with dignity. He shows her that he's comfortable enough with her to drink from the same cup as her. Jesus shows up in her world. He hangs out where she hangs out. And he invites her into this living faith, this authentic, genuine spirituality. I just heard a great quote. The world will not be able to hear our truth until they feel our love. So let me ask you a hard question. When was the last time you went to Samaria? When was the last time you went and engaged somebody who's not like you? I hope that doesn't sound scary, because honestly, you can't do any worse than the disciples. They didn't even talk to the woman at the well. They treated their trip to this other culture as if they were just tourists passing through. In a committee meeting recently, I proposed this idea. Now, it was an idea that would require us getting out and talking to people around where we live, but it was met with this comment: "Oh, that won't work. I don't know who my neighbors are." I've had other people recently tell me something like this: "Everybody I know is a Christian. I can't invite somebody to church. Everybody I know already goes." You know what? Samaria, for you, might be right next door. Maybe I live in a weird pocket of Champagne, but the majority of my immediate neighbors are not active in a church. I live in Samaria, and you probably do too. You eat at restaurants, and you drink at coffee shops in Samaria. You get served your meals at restaurants by Samaritan waitresses. We work and live and play in Samaria. You know what? One of the simplest ways you can get to know somebody who's not like you is just by talking to the people who serve you your food. I've been at a lot of meals with people who never even make eye contact with the waitress. They order, they hand the menu, never even see the color of their eyes. I got to be honest, my heart did a little dance inside this week when I went to Aroma Coffee Shop and the lady knew what I was going to order. Let me bring up something else that I've heard a lot of people say as we've talked about this recently. We've been talking about being a church that lives our faith inside out, a church that's focused outside on those that are not in here. And again, I've heard people say things like, "But we've got to build strong Christians first. I mean, we've got to get people grounded in the scriptures, and we've got to teach them about the creeds and the confessions and the book of order. We've got to get them strong before we send them out. I mean, if we send them out before they're ready, there's no telling what's going to happen." That's true. Look what happened when the woman at the well went out. Her whole village heard about Jesus. And it says many of them came to believe in Jesus. If she'd come to Jesus at our church, we'd have had her in Bible studies for the rest of her life. She might never made it back to her village. Our church is not alone. I don't mean that as an indictment. Need some more coffee. You know what? The truth is, we kind of like our bubble. We like being in our safe place. That's okay. You know, let's be honest. This is not an either or. The church has a responsibility to help people learn and grow. And as we do that, our faith is strengthened. But I think what this story reminds us of is some of the best learning, some of the deepest growing happens when we get outside of our comfort zone and we go and we serve somebody. It happens when we go and we look at somebody and say, "You are more important than me. What can I do for you?" It happens when we leave our comfort zone and we get around people that are not like us and we learn to love them because God does. In recent days, I've been reading through the New Testament and kind of making a list. I've been making a list of any verse that talks about what Jesus wants or expects from Christians and from the church. And the question I've been asking is, what does Jesus say? Like, what's the weight of the New Testament? What's, like, the most important things? What are the things that are heaviest? The things that come up again and again? And I keep coming up with two answers. One is, Jesus desperately wants the church to love and take care of one another. And the other one is, Jesus desperately loves the people who are outside the church. And you see that over and over again in the Gospels. Those are the ones that Jesus hangs out with. Not the religious folks. Not the folks who are going to church. But it's a both and. The first part of the sermon, what I just said, is about our responsibility to step outside of our bubble and to love those who are outside our walls. But the both and part includes, what does Jesus say to us about our connection with God? So here's a couple of thoughts on the words that Jesus says. That was what Jesus did. Here's what Jesus says. First of all, he says, the water I give will become a spring of water gushing out of you, gushing up to everlasting life. Now, here's the thing. Us Presbyterians, we tend to be pretty good at learning about God. We're pretty good at study, and we've got this massive list of creeds and confessions that tell us what you're supposed to believe and think, and we're pretty good at learning about God. You know what we're not so good at? Being spiritually formed and spiritually transformed. You know that Christians now get divorced at a higher rate than non-Christians? Pretty much any social problem, any struggle, us Christians struggle with it at the same rate as non-Christians. Chuck told me recently, Associate Pastor Chuck told me that something like 30% of pastors will have an affair with a church member. 30%. It'd be interesting to see what percentage of Christian men struggle with inappropriate content on the internet. The truth of the matter is, we're not very good at spiritual formation, and I think the reason is what Jesus is saying. We've forgotten how to drink from the well of Jesus. We've forgotten how to be connected to God in such a way that he flows out of us like living water. Here's the thing. Jesus doesn't invite us to know about him. He doesn't give the woman at the well a list of things to study or books to read. Jesus invites us into a real relationship with him. Maybe we can say it like this. Being a Christian is not about knowing about Jesus. It's more about going swimming with Jesus every day. Jesus goes on and he tells her, if you knew who I was, you'd ask me for something to drink, because the water I give is living water. And the woman's blown away. She says, how can you ask me for a drink? You're Jewish. I'm Samaritan. We're not supposed to talk. How can you do that? And Jesus says, basically, you should be asking me for something, not me asking you. And I read that and I thought right away, what do we ask God for? What do you ask God for? I've been really encouraged in the last few months as we've been wrestling with these kind of issues, because people have come up to me with asking questions like this. How do you know what's a real rabbit? Remember that sermon? How do you know what matters? How do you choose the things that are really significant? Or questions like this, how do I live this stuff out at work or at school? I'm so excited by people that are asking the right questions. But I've also recognize that we're still struggling to get that right. Somebody summarized their faith journey this way to me once. I come to church to learn about God, and then I go about my week and try to do good. You know what? That's okay. But what if we came to Jesus, not just Sunday, but every day, and asked Jesus for one thing? Jesus, let me drink from your cup. Give me the water of life. Let your living water flow out of me so that everyone I know can drink from it. What would it be like if the analogy we used to describe our relationship with God was something like this: swimming in God's love? That's my Christian walk. I'm swimming with Jesus. I'm swinging on the rope swing with Jesus. And even if I land flat on my back, it's okay because he's there swimming with me. Do you see how that's different from learning about God? I love what happens next. She goes back to her village and she says, come and meet a man who knows everything I did. That'd be scary to me. I don't want anybody to know the things I've done. But you know what? I think that says something about what God invites us to. God invites us to this relationship that is so real and so honest that nothing stands between us and God. I think we all know that God just knows everything about us, but we still kind of have this wall that we put up. There's these things that we keep from God. There's the parts of our life that, you know, maybe it's work, or maybe it's what we do when we go out, and, you know, we try to hide those things. God invites us into this relationship where there is nothing between us and God. Maybe a better analogy is it's kind of like skinny dipping with Jesus. Dang, that should have been my sermon title. I think if Jesus were to say one word to us about this story this morning, it would be this: come and drink. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Come and drink from the living water so that it would flow out of you. And as it flows out, we won't be able to help but be in the world, to be outside of our bubble. Here's the bottom line for me. God wants desperately to pour so much love into us, to be so connected with us, that the inevitable result is meaningful and never-ending life gushing out of us. And you know what? There's some mighty good swimming holes that we might never see if we don't get outside our church bubble. Can I pray for you? God, thank you for a love so deep that it sees right through us and embraces us. Help us to throw our arms open to that kind of love. Help us to allow you into every place in our lives. Help us every day, all day, to be swimming with you, swimming in the depths of your love. And God, as we do that, lead us out into the world. Lead us to those who are not like us, those who desperately need love. Help us to be your hands and your feet, your arms of love, thrown around those who struggle, those who hurt, those who grieve, those who need. Send us that the world might look more like you want it to. In thinking about what you want it to be, we join together and pray the words that Jesus taught us to pray, saying, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and and the glory forever. Amen.